Hello, everyone. Welcome to Nothing But Now, Mindful Living with me, Dr. Mary Angela McGuire, on Transformation Talk Radio. During this show, I'll help you practice mindfulness. Most of the principles of mindfulness are very simple, but putting those principles into practice can be devilishly difficult. I'm here to help you become a student of your own mind. I'll share ideas, insights, and tools you can use to release yourself from fearful and negative thinking and live from a place of clarity and confidence. Please join me as we challenge ourselves to change. Nothing But Now starts now.
Hey everyone. Welcome to Nothing But Now. I'm Mary Angela McGuire, and you're listening to Nothing But Now on Transformation Talk Radio. Thank you so much for joining us. Today's show is particularly exciting to me, several reasons. One is, this is my first show where I'm going to interview a guest. And second, the guest is one of my favorite people in the world. His name is Dr. Craig Gingrich Philbrook. And Craig is a professor in the Performance Studies Program in the Department of Communication Studies at Southern Illinois University, Carbondale. So obviously, Craig is a teacher, but he's also a mentor, he's a scholar, and he is himself a practitioner and a performance artist. So I asked Craig, thank you so much for joining me today. So glad to have you here.
Oh, it's my pleasure. Absolutely.
Great. Thank you. And you're in your office in Carbondale, is that right?
Yes, this is my office at the university.
Okay. Does it look different from your home office?
Right. You can see if I was in my office at home, You would see all of the creative stuff behind me, music equipment and all of that. So We decided this would be a more streamlined
space and a slightly better internet connection as well. Yeah. Is that right?
Yes. Oh, very much.
Yes. So we are going to talk today. I asked Craig to join me today because he is an expert in the creative process and in creative practices, and I want him to talk about that in the context of something that he and I are both very much interested in and engaged in, and that is practicing mindfulness. And I thought that would be a great combination and he would be the perfect person to talk to. So big topics though, right, Craig?
Oh, absolutely. We can scratch the surface and try to give people some things to think about.
Okay. But I think in order to really address those topics, we want to start by breathing because they're such big topics. So will you join me in the three deep breaths practices? Okay, so what we know is that this is Lori Cameron's three deep breaths, and our goal is to pause slightly at the top of that inhalation to make the exhalation somewhat longer than the inhalation. And then in that first breath, we want to focus on nothing but the sensation of the air entering and exiting our bodies. With the second breath, we want to notice any place in our body where we feel tension and relax. And then for that third breath, we want to set our intentions for this moment. What do we want out of this next hour? So here we go. Breath number one, just notice the sensation of the breath. Breath number two, relax. And breath number three, set your intentions for this moment. So Craig, I want to start with, thank you for joining me, first of all, on that.
Oh,
so mindfulness.
As I do every week.
Yes, and I'm so grateful. So mindfulness, I always like to remind people early on, what is it if you haven't listened before? It is paying attention to or bringing your awareness to the present moment without judgment. And both things are critical. Awareness of the present moment without judgment. So now, in the context of the creative practice, so Craig, I want to start with a kind of a large, wide-ranging question for you, which is, how would you describe or would you talk about what you see as the challenges of the creative process for people?
I think that when folks identify as creative people, mm-hmm. and sometimes they don't necessarily identify that way, right? They are, but they struggle with how to claim that name, and we can talk about that a little bit more in a moment. But I think that in the present circumstances, you know, if we're thinking about the various kinds of turmoil in the country, the dealing with COVID, dealing with the profound abuse of Black Americans by police forces and so on. And trying to think about how to, you know, balance those things that are so acute right now mm-hmm. with other sorts of things that we might be concerned with, ecological devastation, right. The place of our various communities in relationship to the legal system and rights being given or withheld and so on, right? We're balancing so much. And then also sometimes in the context of even more uncertainty about our daily lives in relationship to how to do the market or what's going to be happening with our jobs in a few weeks. So if we're dealing with all of that, mm-hmm. right, and we have that sort of creative spark, we need to hang on to that, right? You know, blow on it like we do a fire, right? That we're trying to make in a storm or, you know, mm-hmm. or something to that effect. And I think it's working in this time is a really good example of what a creativity coach, Eric Mizell, talks about in his book, The Van Gogh Blues, which was so influential to me, remains influential to me. I keep a couple extra copies in that library back there, you know, when they're working against a background of depression and trying to remain creative in these times.
Right.
He talks about crises of meaning, those moments when we think our work can't possibly make a difference, we can't possibly be good enough, all of that, but to try to use mindfulness to kind of get back into that sense where we give ourselves permission to engage creatively, mm-hmm. not to have it, you know, not to get the thing immediately, but to find it through that creative process Ooh. As a way of balancing meaning and kind of bringing it in, you know, sheltering it, trying to give it a place in our lives.
More about that. What do you mean by the difference between the kind of grabbing it and getting it immediately? What's that problem?
So often I think people, I can't speak to all persons, right?
Okay, fine.
When I think about the students that I work with sometimes, or my own self or friends and colleagues, sometimes when they're working on a creative project, they want to have it. There's this fantasy that and sometimes it works this way, you know, the poet sits down at the tablet and goes, wah, 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 wah. It's done, right? As opposed to drafted and thought about. And you know, there's sometimes it's more one and sometimes it's more the other. Right? But if we think that we have to have it and know what that line is or know what that image is in a performance or know what's supposed to happen right here with the music that we're working on, mm-hmm. right? As opposed to finding it and giving ourselves time to try a thing, change it, try another thing, change it. There's a common thing in audio software is A/B.
Okay.
And so you can, some programs or filters will have this A/B thing and you can set it up one way,
right?
The A screen or the A function. Uh-huh. And then set it up another way in the B function and kind of switch it back and forth and see how you feel about it, right? Mm-hmm. And so if we're working on a performance, try it this way, try it that way, see how it makes you feel. Maybe some of A is good and some of B is, you know, it's that sense of finding. You see me doing all of this stuff.
I know, yeah.
It's an embodied way of working.
Right?
And embodiment is such a big term for performance studies, right?
Yes, and for
bodily knowing.
So. Right.
And so, but if we think we're supposed to know, mm-hmm. because we rarely simply know,
yeah.
we'll feel like we're not doing it right.
No, absolutely.
But if we give ourselves permission to find it.
I always think that we see finished products so much that until you give yourself permission to follow your creative instincts and desires, that and all you see are the finished products, that's part of the perception that unless I know immediately, unless every sentence is gold right out of my pen, then I must not be doing it right. I must not have the gift, the capacity, etc. And that revision can feel like failing as opposed to discovering. And that's what I hear you saying, is that the process itself is the discovery of the of what it is you're trying to produce, share with the world, et cetera, as opposed to simply taking an idea in my head and making it perfect first time out.
It's so important.
It is so important. But it is a real barrier. Do you see that with students, that they struggle to engage in the process part of it?
Yeah, I think sometimes it's about time. I mean, we're in such a kind of overworked, overscheduled culture.
Right.
That the time for creativity is, you know, that's a thing you kind of have to wrangle, right? And we'll talk about maybe a little bit later about daily practice as a way of handling the time aspect. You know, but some of it is just the anxiety, you know, of feeling like if I don't know, I'm not prepared to do this. Or, you know, you sometimes have, over the course, your listeners are used to you talking sort of about the dictator and the wild child.
Yes. Right?
You know, so sometimes their dictator is telling them, oh, you aren't good enough or whatever. And the wild child is saying, I want to do all of these things. You know, maybe neither of those voices are right. And so that I have to try to help them learn how to weave them and balance them.
Okay. And to hear the kind of the inner voice as well.
Yes.
Right. Okay. Well, Craig, this seems like a great place for our break. So we're going to take a break. And when we come back, we're going to talk more about resources, practices, and some of the other ways in which we get in a sense that dictator voice and that wild child voice get in the way of our giving ourselves permission to be creative. So you are listening to Nothing But Now on Transformation Talk Radio, and we will be right back.
What would you do with the power of community? How do you create your own rituals? Tune into Living Your Gifts with me, Susan Huff, Ancient Applications for Modern Times, the second Wednesday of each month on TransformationTalkRadio.com. Our lives begin with the stories we are told and the stories we tell ourselves. Storytelling is the key. To learn more about me, visit LivingYourGifts.com. That's LivingYourGifts.com.
Are you meeting your sales goals? Or maybe your business plan could use a dose of the divine? Tune in to Divinely Driven Results with faith-based business coach Elise Smith on TransformationTalkRadio.com. Coach Elise Smith helps listeners get unstuck from their business plateau and become empowered through divine guidance. Build up belief in yourself and your dreams and learn business strategies that work for you for real lasting results. Learn more by visiting www.DivinelyDrivenResults.com.
Are you done being afraid to jump into the life that's waiting for you? Are you ready for a real shift? I invite you to tune in every Tuesday with me, Tracy L., on the Tracy L. Clark Show, where we will teach you how to live your extraordinary life. At 8 a.m. Pacific on Transformation Talk Radio, where I will provide the tools and the steps needed to help you transcend perceived limitations and move forward with an extraordinary life. For more information, visit me at TracyLClark.com.
Tune in to The Truth Is Funny with Colette Stephan each Wednesday at 8 a.m. Pacific, 11 a.m. Eastern on TransformationTalkRadio.com. This hit show will have you thinking outside the box and riding the wave of infinite potential. Join Colette on the Higher Self Network, inspiring listeners to shine their brilliance and ensure success while roaring with laughter as they recognize the humor of the giant cosmic joke. Visit TheTruthIsFunny.com.
We remember a time when you could simply form a thought and it would manifest. The harmony was forgotten, but it is returning now. The Power of Inspiration and Awakening Radio with Julia Griffin on TransformationTalkRadio.com each second and fourth Wednesday at 9 a.m. Pacific will take you on adventures through the heart and spirit, exploring who we once were. This intuitive healer studied under the guidance of wolves, learning from their wisdom to master a higher frequency for a new state of mind. Visit OneTrueSelf.com.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back to Nothing But Now on Transformation Talk Radio. I'm Mary Angela McGuire, and I'm so excited to be here today with my friend and guest, Craig Gingrich Philbrook from Southern Illinois University. So Craig, we've been talking about mindfulness and the creative process, and you've given us a lot to think about in terms of the challenges of giving ourselves permission to follow our creative spark and our creative impulses. So I'd like to back up for a couple of minutes and ask you to talk to us about how it is that you came to be a creative artist and what that journey has been like. And I just think that's always very instructive for people to know where people have come from in their journey. So tell us about you, Craig.
Okay. Well, I depending upon how far back we want to go. as a kid, I was sort of more of a reading, art making, you know, play with the animals, draw things, mm-hmm. Kind of kid. Mm-hmm. And so grew up in a family that just really loved music, not musicians, but, you know, radio, records on all of the time. My grandmother on my mother's side was a dance instructor, among many other things.
Uh-huh.
And there are stories of, you know, they tell stories about me being a little baby, you know, mm-hmm. kind of a toddler, leaning up against the speaker.
Oh.
My grandmother's house, she had a big giant speaker in this uh-huh. old kind of mid-century cabinet.
You know? Wow.
And I would just lean against it, you know, and kind of bounce along, you know, with the music. That kind of thing. I began writing in earnest, I guess, probably in middle school, kind of through high school, became a creative writing major as an undergrad with a specialization in poetry. This is sort of around the time that we're meeting.
Yep.
And so in the context of forensics, public speaking competition. And so when I got, after I graduated from undergrad, I became really interested in this sort of emerging thing called performance studies in the communication discipline, because it was a way to both speak and perform and draw on all of that public speaking experience and the creative writing that I was doing.
Right.
And so this is about the time that performance art is having a kind of renaissance in the States, you know, with the rise of people like Karen Finley and my now good friend Tim Miller, really using live creative speaking as a way of engaging with social change. And so it was in the context of making performances that I became interested in making music for those performances.
So I
think of all of these things that I do as being, you know, like branches of a tree.
Right.
It's not, you know, my visual art is over here and my performance is over there and my creative writing is over there. They're all informing each other. Right. And I will often use one as a way to think about another. So when I'm working on performance, I keep a sketchbook.
Oh.
Images that I am kind of thinking about for scenes, mm-hmm. making charts,
uh-huh.
all that sort of stuff. And I will sometimes, if I'm working on an image in writing or for the stage, will make a music piece as a way of thinking about it. What's the sound that is going with this? And even if the sound doesn't get in it, you know,
right.
into the eventual piece, they're commenting on each other and giving me different ways of being mindful
right.
about my experience,
right?
And watching how my mind is making sense of these various possibilities for representation.
Right. When I think about your work, and I had the privilege of seeing some of your performance work very early on, and of course, as well as your poetry, but so to me, your work is characterized by such a rich use of language and creating images with language. So it is in the mind, but it is very visual, given the richness of the language that you use. Was your practice of sketching and bringing music, creating music for your work, has that always been there, or did that develop over time? And did it feel like a leap? I think especially maybe with the music. How did you make that leap?
Well, I began making music because mm-hmm. as I was working with young performers, mm-hmm. they would want to play a popular song.
Right.
Lady Gaga song.
Sure.
And I felt like they were just kind of sitting on stage pointing at the speaker and letting Lady Gaga do all the work. And I understand it's important to be able to engage with the contemporary, and artists are often doing that. And I don't, you know, I'm not casting aspersions on the ironic use of popular song. This is very, you know, from right. that kind of anger on a really important, you know, part of our artistic practice.
Right.
But I felt they were losing some opportunities, sacrificing some opportunities by simply citing a popular thing rather than making it.
Okay.
So I saw that Apple released this software called Soundtrack. This was back in the day when I had the Apple page as my start page on Safari, because I'm that kind of Apple evangelist. And immediately went and got it, started experimenting with it. Loved being able to work that way. Began making sound for shows. Teaching people how to ask me questions about the sound that they wanted. And then the students started making their own, making music for each other, and, you know, problem solved. But I think important to all of that is the willingness to give yourself permission to move into another aesthetic realm and to follow an impulse without feeling like you need, you know, some record executive's permission, you know, to monkey around with the, you know, the GarageBand or Audacity or any of the freeware. I mean, you know, you can spend a lot of money on audio software, but so much of it is freely available. And I think it helps people connect to the creative capacity of every human being. You know, I mean, that's kind of my, if I had a banner, that's what it would, you know, it would. It had Joseph Beuys' idea of everyone is an artist on it. You know?
Well, that's interesting that you say that, because I was thinking about your story about of childhood and leaning against the speakers. And I take it that that's not a memory you have. That's a story that was told to you about you, right?
I have a very sensual experience of that speaker, though, I have to say.
Okay.
I know that speaker. I mean, it was in...
So I think that's a very interesting, that in a way the story got narrated to you as a very young child, that your family had artistic interests, valued art and the creative process, and that they saw you as someone who was drawn to it. Do you think that gave you permission? And do you sometimes with students see that they've kind of lacked that story in their life, and that is in itself a kind of barrier to giving themselves permission to explore their creativity?
Yeah, I was very blessed in that way with my family, you know. Mm-hmm. So, it was very common, you know, to get like art supplies for your birthday or something like that. My dad had really wanted to be an architect, and he was very interested in visual art. Mm-hmm. He and my mom got married when they were very young, and then, you know, there I am. And, you know, so he became a telephone lineman.
Mm-hmm.
But he would draw with me at the kitchen table.
Okay.
And mom was always singing. Mom and grandma and my grandmother's sister, Jane, were always singing in the house. And so I was definitely immersed in that.
Mm-hmm.
And my mom really encouraged my creative writing early on.
Did she?
In important ways, yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Do you have students who don't have that kind of background? Do you see them struggling as a result sometimes?
They really do, I think, sometimes, if they don't have that background, but they have that impulse, you know, We're surrounded by something that I like to think of as the ecology of reception.
Right? Okay.
So we've got our friends' voices, our family's voices, our own understanding of how our friends talk about music or art or whatever. That we have heroes that, you know, are these very famous people who do things really well. And we can forget sometimes that they're a person, and we don't see them, you know, tearing their hair out in the studio trying to get something right, and it can all look so easy. Given they too are involved in the process. Mm-hmm. And so the students are often, I think, really surrounded by these voices, right? Mm-hmm. Telling them, you know, that they're not good enough, or that, you know, they'll never make it on Broadway, as if that were the sole criterion for performance in a human life.
Right.
The worst possible thing that we've done as a culture is to think that art can only be professionalized and can only be monetized, or it's not valuable.
And again, it puts us in that really unfortunate space in terms of mindfulness, which is it reinforces the judging mind.
Yes.
It reinforces comparison, that constant, and we're only looking at finished products and comparing our halting, struggling process to somebody's fully produced, smoothed out, you know, fully realized product.
And I think things can be too slick. You know, I say this thing all of the time. I'd say you want to be careful that you don't overinvest in a beautiful sheen on a shallow pond.
Oh, that's lovely. Say that again.
If it's too perfect, the piece is being interesting to me. You know, I'm a process fragment kind of person.
Okay, great.
I try to help them find their way to that. And I'll say it all the time, trust your vision. You know, they're like, oh, I don't want to revise. Right, like it's so much work. But once you get the draft out there, it holds still. And you can sit there and think and make a decision and breathe three times. Your attention for how you want to change, you know, the particular passage that you're working on or something like that. It's a freedom. Revision is freedom.
Oh, that's a powerful idea. That's a very powerful idea. Okay, we're going to take a break. And when we come back, we're going to talk more about the particular practices, both that you bring to your creative work that you've sort of previewed here, and mindfulness practices, and what people can do to think about the creative process. Because I think one of the things you just said that's super important is it's not just about being able to sell it or being able to be on Broadway or the most fully dynamic and commercial or popular version of an art, but kind of what is the art in everyday life that we may be practicing as well that is freeing to us because we allow our creative impulses to be expressed. So we're going to take a break. This is Nothing But Now on Transformation Talk Radio.
Are you ready to accelerate your wealth and success? Join Ahana and Daniel from Rise and Be Rich with Cornelia Stephanie on the Millionaire Imprint for Women on Transformation Talk Radio every third Friday, 1 p.m. PST. Step out of lack and into your power of creation. Build and grow your wealth. Create prosperous businesses that make a difference. Visit ahanalara.com/RBR show.
Do you know how powerful your thoughts and beliefs are in determining your experience of your life? Is it really true that simply by changing some of the words you use in your day-to-day language, that you can change your life? I'm Megan Edge. Join me on Playing on the Edge, Radical Change with Ease, with my co-host, Dr. Pat, on Transformation Talk Radio. I look forward to seeing you there.
To find out more about Megan Edge, visit her website at meganedge.ca.
Yeah, yippee skippy to that, baby. We're not done yet. Some of us are out here to educate and inspire. This year, 2020, is the year we gotta show me the money in the cash flow. I'm Dr. Pat. This is the Dr. Pat Show. This is Talk Radio to Thrive By.
Visit thedrpatshow.com.
Are you meeting your sales goals? Or maybe your business plan could use a dose of the divine? Tune in to Divinely Driven Results with faith-based business coach Elise Smith on TransformationTalkRadio.com. Coach Elise Smith helps listeners get unstuck from their business plateau and become empowered through divine guidance. Build up belief in yourself and your dreams and learn business strategies that work for you for real lasting results. Learn more by visiting www.divinelydrivenresults.com.
Conscious Confidence Radio, a timeless wisdom with Sarah Main. Tune in each month on Transformation Talk Radio and join Sarah on an adventurous journey to the deeper level of meaning to move beyond today's world of constant change, confusion, and uncertainty beyond the shadow of fear. This hit show explores key concepts such as confidence, values, and attitude in a dynamic way. To learn more about Sarah and her work, visit sarahmain.com.
Hi, everyone. Welcome back to Nothing But Now on Transformation Talk Radio. I'm Mary Angela McGuire, and today I'm talking to Dr. Craig Gingrich-Philbrook from the Performance Studies Program at Southern Illinois University's Department of Communication Studies. And Craig and I are talking today about the relationship between the creative process and mindfulness. And in our last segment, we were talking about, if we start from the mindfulness perspective, the challenge of the voices that we hear that are constantly getting in our way, whether we're talking about the creative process or just any kind of aspects of our daily life, where a voice of a dictator, a kind of constantly criticizing voice, a voice filled with self-doubt, or that wild child voice who is just pure need and struggling to get it the amount of attention and love and support that it needs, those two voices being at war with each other. And if I think about that in terms of a creative artist trying to produce work, it must be extremely difficult to, especially in our cultural context where we think about art only in terms of really finished products or commercial work, to allow ourselves to, I always say, kind of acknowledge those voices, give them some credit for being caring about us, but at the same time kind of asking them to get out of our way. And so that we can hear the inner voice that wants to not compare ourselves to others, wants to just find our own true thing that we want to express to the world. So Craig, you work with students who are artists, but who may be struggling to allow themselves, to give themselves permission to explore their art. But it's also true for people in everyday life. All of, you would say, as quoting, is it Joseph Beuys, right, that we are all artists. So could you talk a little bit more about this work that you do with students to help them give themselves permission?
Well, one of the things I think that's important is to remember that we sort of grow up in that ecology of reception.
Okay.
Like we grow up hearing about what actors are supposed to be, or what poets are supposed to be, or what musicians are supposed to be, and so on. And those voices, those demands about what we think we're supposed to do if we want to take on that term, can be very limiting, but they can also be understood to be a resource in a way, especially if we remember that we don't have to come up with one way of interacting with them.
Right? Okay.
So the thing that has helped me the most with this is the idea of the creative double bind from Eric Peterson and Kristen Langelier. They are performance studies communication scholars. They're both retired now. But this construct of theirs has been kind of my lifeblood in a lot of ways. You know, they're friends of mine, and I find the idea very useful. So let me kind of try to talk about that.
Okay.
If a student or a young, kind of an emerging creative person feels like they are hearing these sort of competing things, they're right.
Okay.
They're right about that. Okay. And they can feel sometimes like they're supposed to pick one or the other, right? Mm-hmm. But really we have to kind of, there's this beautiful Kate Bush song, Walk Straight Down the Middle of It, that I always think of when I kind of think about the creative double bind. Not in the sense that we have to be centrist about it, but we have to kind of walk between. So Peterson and Langelier give the example of a kind of classic creative double bind for the actor.
Okay.
So that as they're developing this, that, you know, the actor is told that they must know everything. They must know that script. Right. They must plan what they're going to do with their bodies, all their facial expressions and sort of all that. Everything is planned. Know your instrument. No. Like,
right.
Decay now, right?
And,
now. Yes. and they're told, be yourself or be natural. And those things are pretty contradictory, right? Mm-hmm. Planet, be natural.
Right.
And the thing is, you kind of want some plan and you kind of want some natural, right? So you have to kind of work, you know, sort of through the middle of it. There are some classic ones that pertain to, that I think about a lot, you know, particularly for political performance artists such as myself. Audiences sometimes will say, well, tell me what to do about it. How? What am I supposed to do about that? They want an answer. Mm-hmm. Right? And they'll also say, don't hit me over the head with it.
Right. So
you got to kind of try to find that, you know, that way to walk, you know, down the middle of it. Uh-huh. And so Peterson and Longelier say we need to establish a double bind and elaborate it and then exceed it. And what that really means is, from the context of mindfulness, if we're a creative person, what are the competing voices that we hear?
Right.
Establish it.
Yes.
Think about it. Where did we get this one? Where did we get this one? Learn more about them, right? Mm-hmm. Elaborate.
Right.
Elaborate your understanding of it. Attend to your own mind. Right. Where did you get these different sorts of things? Mm-hmm. And then exceed it. And that's that walking down the middle of it. I will not be limited by this. I will find my path down the middle. Right. And that's where the finding, you know, that we were talking about, you know, rather than having, is so important.
Right.
Because if we're told all of these different sorts of things, and we have an idea for a particular poem or a particular piece, we're trying to move that content and how we feel about it through that double bind in a particular historical situation in a way that feels meaningful to us and that might be meaningful to some of our audience members. That's a lot of, we're doing a lot of things when we're thinking creatively. Mm-hmm. And I think that mindfulness can really help us attend to how we might be unnecessarily suffering under the weight of that double bind.
Yes.
Rather than feeling like we have the license to identify the double binds that pertain to us.
Right.
And study them. Become a student of those tensions. And then try different ways of balancing them and holding them in orientation around a particular topic. And it's sort of through the history of all of those negotiations that we might develop something like a style or our voice.
Oh, interesting.
You know, that our body of work is a record of our negotiation of all of that. Not our knowing in advance, but our negotiation of all of that.
And oh, that's, I think,
that's why this concept is so beautifully useful to me. And I would say that of the, When I'm trying to figure out how to solve a problem in performance, I will ask myself, well, what are the creative double binds that are pertaining to this moment? How can I establish, elaborate, and exceed them? And in a way to, you know, if I think about Thich Nhat Hanh's idea of doing the dishes to do the dishes.
Right.
Working on the piece to work on the piece. Not trying to get to the end of it so that I'm dead that whole time. I'm just trying to memorize a thing. Mm-hmm. But live through that process of that negotiation.
You know, I can't help, as you're talking about the creative double bind, but think about Tara Brach's work about suffering. And she uses an acronym, RAIN. And it's interesting to me how closely it resembles the three stages or the three pieces of Peterson and Longelier's work. So recognize, right? When we're in the midst of it, to recognize the feeling, the anxiety, whatever, the fear, or I would say the double binds. What are those voices that are competing telling us? And acknowledge it instead of pushing it away or being trapped by those voices, but acknowledge it. And then the next part, investigate, right? Her eye is investigate, have a deeper understanding of it, right? Mm-hmm. And then the fourth, the N, is it comes out in various ways in various places that she writes about it, but it is really about having a non-judging awareness of that, which I think can, if you think about the judging awareness is an awareness that's trapping us, right? It's kind of pushing us down, whereas non-judging awareness, I think, may have a nice parallel with exceeding, right? It's going beyond, it's letting go and allowing what's happening to happen and to pass through you. And if I think about that in terms of the creative process of how easy it is to get stuck, right? Artists talk about this, it's writer's block, it's stage fright, it's all the different ways that we talk about stuckness in our work and in our lives. And this is a way to work through that process. Yeah. Without, and in a way that I think we can bring an attitude of loving kindness towards ourselves. Right? It's okay that that happens, isn't it? Right? Is it? Because I think we always think about that again. Of if do students come to you with that sense of, but if I'm having these challenges and these problems and these voices, aren't I failing? Aren't I doing it wrong? And you're saying no. That's it.
that's where it resides.
Yes. Right.
Our artistry can reside in our exquisite attention to these challenges, mm-hmm. and our willingness to do a thing in the presence of those challenges. Mm-hmm. I think sometimes we think we're going to vanquish them, like
right.
Bum, bah, 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 we're yes. Super artists. And on.
It's over.
Before, right.
Go with that again.
And, yeah, and it's not like that. Right. This is our negotiation with the monster angel of being alive, mm-hmm. And being present
right.
today right. and tomorrow mm-hmm. and the next day. Right. And being able to think about our experience of those tensions over time. And the ways that we might reorient our practice here or there, kind of depending upon, what we're experiencing or what we discover in rehearsal or drafting or the sketchbook or the daily audio practice or, something like that. And that's why I think that, having some kind of daily practice can be so useful. You in your first episode, you talk about finding the thing that you're going to use as your example of mindfulness. And I've told you that for me, it's washing out our cat Donut's food bowl.
Tell me about that.
Huh?
Yeah. Why? How does that work for you?
Well, there's this cute little cat face.
Oh!
Little cat going... Mm-hmm. Pause up, but it's all happy. And it's surrounded by these little lines, like it's like some kind of little angel cat.
Okay.
And cleaning it, I can sort of think about this as a way of getting this prepared for Donut. Mm-hmm. And I'm not rushing through it.
Right.
And I can, sort of think about how I'm experiencing this morning, right? When I'm doing this. Mm-hmm. And I'm focusing on it so much that I want to get a little GoPro camera when I'm washing the bowl. And I think I might be using that in my next show as a way of kind of thinking about this, this sense of dailiness. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But if we give ourselves permission to do morning pages, as Julia Cameron talks about in The Artist's Way, to write 3 pages a day. And it freaks people out when they hear that. And if you do it, you get to the end of the 3 pages and you're like, no, I'm not done. That's fine. Right. You get to keep going. Mm-hmm. There's a period of time where I make a 64-bar piece of music every day.
Okay.
I'm not doing that in my life right now, but I did this for several months as a way of coming to terms with some of the software that I have. And as a way of working on sound when I didn't feel like I could finish anything.
Okay, right.
What can I do in an hour or two in the morning mm-hmm. on these 64 bars? And that's what I do. And we learn from those moments. Mm-hmm. That's how we develop strategies for solving problems when we get to the thing that we do really want to finish.
Okay.
It becomes a way, I think, of investing in our artistry, despite okay. those voices, and conversing with them.
Mm-hmm. Right, being in a relationship to them, as opposed to trying to run from them or using them as a sense of evidence of your failure or not good enough, et cetera. Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, let's keep talking about some of those practices. So I'll tell you my anxieties about this. I think there's time and material. So if I think about my own kind of limiting beliefs about life and I recognize they come from childhood, blah, 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 there's that feeling or anxiety about wastefulness. So I have actually kind of a lot of art supplies. I have a box full of paper because I like collages, and it is very hard for me to take glue and scissors to paper and just make stuff because it feels like a finite resource and it's going to go away and you shouldn't waste it. And what am I doing with it anyway? And who's ever going to see it? And right, I mean, that just the voices get really loud. And then the other part of that is the time question. Because one of the things I notice about a couple of your examples is that you're not necessarily talking about an 8-hour day of sitting down and saying, I'm going to spend 8 hours. I love the look on your face. Oh my gosh, that's not even possible, is it? Right? That even in short periods of time where we bring our mindful attention, where we're there fully present to the moment without judgment, allowing ourselves to write or paint or perform or whatever it might be, that isn't in itself as valuable. So could you talk a little bit about kind of that feeling of wastefulness that I think a lot of us allow to get in our way of producing art?
Absolutely. The beautiful paper.
Uh-huh.
Oh my God.
We both love beautiful paper, yes.
I totally understand this. But here's the thing. Think about how sad whoever cleans out your house after you die is going to be if they come across a box full of beautiful paper that you never got to use.
Mm-hmm.
I think there is a sense of this wanting to save.
Yes.
Way back in the day, I have a poem about saving butter at a restaurant. You know, I'm relatively poor as a grad student at right. this restaurant. I'm having this wonderful bread and saving this butter, you know, for this bread, and then realizing I have left about half of the pat of butter on the plate, like unconsumed, because I'm trying to not to waste
right.
it. Right?
Right.
Like I could have asked the server for more butter.
Right.
You know, that's not a thing I necessarily understood at that
right.
time. The idea that if we're not making something that's going to end up in the Museum of Modern Art in New York with these art supplies, that equals waste.
Right.
Is a problem.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And using materials in the process of these sort of daily practices is a legit use of those materials.
Okay.
That is a super legit use of those materials.
Yes.
Because if you think about it, your increased capacity as an artist by learning how this particular kind of paper works mm-hmm. with various adhesives or
right.
you know, how you can, you know, how it scratches or how it accepts ink or paint or, you know, something like that.
Right.
That is valuable.
Right.
Right. And that's going to help you solve a problem later for a piece that you might want to send to a friend or make for your own living room or, you know, whatever it might be.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's a legit use of that really pretty paper.
Right. Right. And I suspect it's part of how people began to create work out of found objects too, is that kind of loosening of the neural pathways to say, this too can be art, this too can be transformed in interesting and beautiful ways, or interesting and difficult ways, challenging ways, right? Mm-hmm. Not all art is beautiful.
Yeah, you know, I think of the collagist and painter and sculptor Max Ernst, who mm-hmm. did a lot of things with sort of old illustrations from catalogs,
right.
and old engravings, mm-hmm. and things that were sort of ubiquitous.
Mm-hmm.
In his life. And so, if you want to sit down with the newspaper and make a collage out of the newspaper, if that you know, kind of makes you feel better. You want to do that for a while before you trust yourself with the pretty
you know, paper.
Zen paper or whatever. You know, do it. But no, I think the goal is to end life having used all of the
stuff.
I think about this with spices in my kitchen or software that I haven't really come to grips with yet or something like that.
Okay, we're going to come back to that. Don't let me forget the spices in your kitchen, because I want to talk a little bit more about everyday creativity, but also then the time issue. So when you're working on a piece, are you expecting yourself to work 40 hours a week on it? Are you failing if you're not? You know, how do you think about it in terms of time?
I have a displaced time orientation, as we would say, you know, in comm studies, when I'm dealing with other people. Displaced means time is out there and I have to keep up with it. Oh, it's five after.
Right.
And I have a very diffuse time orientation when it comes to my own work. Oh, I'm thinking about it now. Maybe I'll be able to do that tonight.
Mm-hmm.
How it feels.
Right.
Someone needs a conversation. Let me have that conversation with them. Back in my mind, I'm working on the piece.
Right.
When I'm being good to myself, I put in the calendar, you know, my schedule, my time.
For this piece. Okay.
Because people will say, I couldn't find the time. And I'll always say to the student, you didn't make the time. Don't say couldn't. You could. That sounds judgy, and I don't mean it like that.
Right.
But if we change the verb and recognize that we have the agency to make the time, that's different than feeling like we have to wait to find the time. Oh, look, under the sofa, here's 5 minutes.
You know, I knew I'd find it somewhere, yes.
Yeah, you know, it's not like that. Right? Oh,
but it's also
a traffic
not
jam. Let me do a memo on my iPhone. No. I mean, do it, right?
Yeah.
Maybe not the phone and the traffic jam, but you know that.
Found time. Yes.
We get to make the time.
Mm-hmm. And the time doesn't always have to be huge amounts of time, right? That isn't essential. But also, it's, what was I going to say? I just think that people do struggle thinking that they sort of aren't allowed. I mean, to me, that's all part of the giving permission of I can take a little bit of time for myself. To be engaged in a creative practice, and it will be liberating whether my day job is as a lawyer or a teacher or an engineer or whatever I might be doing. Should be in a way available to, I would say, to all of us. So what are some other ways in which you think people are being creative in their lives and maybe not really giving themselves credit for the idea that they are creative folks?
Well, I think that, there's sort of an emerging term, I guess it's been around for a couple of years now, craftivism. And, you know, sometimes this can have a very pronounced form. So like people doing really interesting social justice work with needlepoint.
Right.
You may have seen,
yes, I have.
You know, some images like this go around.
Yes.
But the things that we do to make anything special for a person.
Okay.
For another is an everyday thing.
Oh, okay.
It can be that for ourselves too.
Right.
You know?
Right.
Taking the time to wash some cold grapes for ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Especially if we're not slamming the grapes around the kitchen. Right. To get them on the plate and get them down before we have to run out of the house. That's not that's not it.
Mm-hmm.
Right. I think the time to have a conversation with someone, but you know, listening is an art form.
Right.
Right. And so there are other ways to think about art in our daily lives. Explore some of those in the next segment.
We're almost out actually of time, but we're going to,
I thought we
blew right through that because we were having such a nice conversation.
Right.
So I want to leave people with one thing, and I'll let you leave people with one thing. So the one thing I want to leave people with is that a mindfulness practice in and of itself is an opportunity for creative expression, whether it's in listening or cooking or acting or music, et cetera. What's something you'd like to leave us with?
I would like to say, I would like to just leave people with that thing about not worrying about having it.
Okay.
And to be willing to find it.
Okay.
You know, we don't have our life at some level in any kind of whole way.
Right.
We find our life from moment to moment. And I think we can do that with our art as well.
Okay. Let's do 3 deep breaths.
Yes.
Inhale. Relax. Set your intention for the next hour. I hope you will join me next week on Nothing But Now, where we're going to talk about, am I fretting, am I planning? Am I fretting, am I planning? And Craig Gingrich-Philbrook, thank you so much. You can find Craig through Southern Illinois University at Carbondale's website. If you'd like to get in contact with him, I'm sure he'd be happy to hear from you. Okay?
Please.
Thank you, Craig.
You're welcome, Mary Angela. Thank you.
See you next week, folks.
You've been listening to Nothing But Now, Mindful Living with Dr. Mary Angela McGuire on Transformation Talk Radio. Join me next time as we continue to practice mindfulness and challenge ourselves to change. If you'd like to find out more about my work or contact me, please go to my website, McGuireLifeCoach.com. That's McGuireLifeCoach.com. See you next time.
The music for Nothing But Now was created by Salt Theory.